Chapter 4. See, I told you I would sneak that story in here somewhere. Anyway, Dougie has fallen asleep, listening, as always, with a sloppy grin on his face and a beer in his hand. I shake his shoulder. Come on, up. You can nap later. Close up your cooler and let's get this over to the body shop. We finish strapping the armoire to the lift's forks. Climb into the cab and buckle in. Wrenching the ancient vehicle into gear, I tap the dashboard. Auto drive. Destination, body shop. Static fills the cabin as usual, and I hear avzmth, which I translate as affirmative. As we head for the zillionth time in my life out to the body shop, I ponder once again how miserable and boring and smelly my existence is here. But how genius the Gitano family was in creating Phil City 1. Take this one junk armoire. It'll require a single hour to repair. It's only missing one leg, and some of the veneers are lifting. And within a second hour, it'll be back on a flatbed, ready to deliver to an Ethan Allen in New Hampshire, for sale as new. Cash from trash. And that's just the teeniest tip of the iceberg. Those crafty Gitanos aren't lying when they call Phil City 1 the City of Gold. Although, let me be perfectly clear. Phil City 1 is not the City of Gold in any positive feel-good way. And no one living here will ever call it that. It is, rather, the largest stinking trash heap in the world. That is not an exaggeration or a figure of speech either. It is literally the world's largest garbage dump. By a mile. Ah, my wonderful home. Phil City 1 was once called Staten Island, one of the five boroughs of New York City, until the 58 square miles of premium waste-ready land was auctioned off by the state of New York in 2025 to become the country's very first privately owned city. Well, less of a city and more of a landfill. Actually, it's nothing at all like a city, and 100% like a landfill. Wasteway Corporation won the bid, not because it made the most sense, but because generation upon generation of the Staten Island Gitano mob family, founders of the privately held corporation, had perfected the arts of intimidation, graft, bribery, and, of course, making people disappear. So, they made some people disappear, stuffed the appropriate pockets with the appropriate amounts of cash, won the bid, and planted their flag on the highest hill in the land. Which, of course, was already the borough's massive garbage pile. Then they moved everyone out, built a 30-foot wall around the whole island, knocked down all the bridges, and constructed a single drawbridge across the Arthur Kill into New Jersey. One way in, one way out. They say if you see it from the New Jersey Turnpike, it looks like a medieval castle, with a drawbridge and a moat, and gun turrets that resemble ancient battlements every quarter mile or so. How quaint. It must be nice to see it from the outside, passing by and then forgetting about it forever. Oh, yes, I said gun turrets. It would be fair to wonder why the Gitanos feel the need to be so protective. It's just garbage, right? Wrong. While the new owners might have been mobsters, they weren't the mook types from the old 20th century movies. The Gitanos are shrewd bastards, hoarding trash and making coin off it over and over and over again. Hence, the City of Gold. First, of course, they get paid for hauling the trash for the entire East Coast into the most gargantuan landfill on the planet. Cha-ching. Then they recycle just about everything, including this mint-condition French armoire with one leg missing, an unopened gallon of Benjamin Moore eggshell white, prescription drugs, cars, and more laptops than could ever be counted. The Hunters, a subset of the Fillers, the group to which my family belongs, sift and sort and prioritize. The armoire will go to the Phil City 1 body shop, then back to that Ethan Allen store in New Hampshire. Cha-ching. The paint will go back on the shelf in a hardware store in Virginia. Cha-ching. The same with the drugs, the car, and computer parts. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Next are the plastics, papers, glass, and batteries. And after that, the compost. Wasteway Corporation is now the number one provider of fertilizer to the entire country. Every bit of organic matter and waste from Maine to Florida is corralled into the pit, a godforsaken circle of hell I try to stay as far away from as humanly possible, and mixed with who knows what to stew for a while. The end result? According to Wasteway, Fertifood, the finest growth medium on Earth. According to me, the most putrid and lethal substance in the solar system, possibly the universe, able to maim, no, kill, with a single sniff. If you look up foul in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of the pit. Finally, and this is the real secret sauce of Phil City 1 and all the other Phil cities, is energy. The real reason for the walls and the gun turrets. The real gold that makes all the other work done here seem petty and irrelevant. During the decomposition process, evaporation, chemical reactions, and microbial action create gas, mostly methane and carbon dioxide. The chemists here supercharged the process and refined the end product, creating a top-secret, patented, prized fuel called Phil City Turbo. And they created it just in time, too, just as the great gas crisis of 2030 gripped the world, with global oil reserves drying up almost overnight. Pretty insanely perfect timing, I'll give them credit. And yes, in case it wasn't already obvious, the federal government is Turbo's number one buyer. So the feds pay for the trash to be taken away, and pay for it again when it comes back as desperately needed fuel. Yes, the Gitanos are smart. Extremely smart. But they can't resist the lure of the less elegant aspects of organized crime. It's in their blood. So they continue to loan, pimp, deal, gamble, and make people disappear. Of course, they need a place to put all the bodies. How about a 100-foot-deep pile of trash everyone on Earth wants to avoid? Good idea, Sal. Not only does it turn out to be a convenient dumping spot, but it sends the right message to sellers and buyers and potential energy competitors that they all, very literally, should treat the Gitanos and Wasteway Corporation as if their lives depended on it. And how big is this dark side of the business? Well, officially, Phil City 1 has no cemetery. 3 hospitals, 10 elementary schools, 1 orphanage, 55 streets, 9,000 dwellings, 25,000 permanent residents who work the refinery and the fill, and a mortuary for the locals. But no cemetery. Unofficially, it probably has the biggest cemetery in the tri-state area. Let me put it another way. Be careful where you dig. So, sure, Phil City 1 is the model of waste management and energy production, operating the world's largest landfill and the most massive network of refineries and pipelines the world has ever seen. But it's hell. It's dangerous. It's corrupt. It smells. And us fillers are never allowed to leave. My nana signed a contract for a bare-bones salary and a free home, like all the other original fillers, back in 2028 or so. She absently scanned the fine print that declared she was no longer a citizen of the United States, but a citizen, in air quotes, of privately held Phil City 1, with no rights whatsoever and no visa to leave, even temporarily. The fine print also noted that the contract was to stay in effect for 8 generations. Not years, generations. Her children couldn't leave. Her children's children couldn't leave. Her children's children's children. And when the 8th generation comes, it's likely they'll have no leverage, nothing to show for their indentured servitude. So they'll have to renew the contract, etc. The outside world forgot all this after just one generation. The mainlanders are mostly ignorant, retaining just a wisp of a memory about some strange and dirty beings named fillers who make their trash disappear and magically supply their fuel. To hear the word filler on TV is like hearing a curse. It makes me mad. But I don't blame Nana. Life was hard already, and she thought this was a way to make it better. It just didn't work out that way.
Paper! Paper!
I snap back to reality just in time to watch 3 body shop workers diving out of the way of our lift, and Dougie frantically reaching for the dashboard controls. Exit auto drive! Exit auto drive! Jamming the override lever's hard right, I narrowly miss one of the giant stanchions holding the whole place up and brake hard, sending us into a spin, missing another stanchion by millimeters. We jerked to a stop. Whew, that was close. System glitched again. But the momentum of our spin has already jettisoned the armoire like a bullet from beneath its straps. We watch helplessly as it skids down the drive right into a concrete wall, smashing into splinters. Dougie asks in all seriousness, "You think they can still repair it?" "I don't know. Ask him." The foreman, Tom Bradline, moves his toothpick to the other side of his mouth, scowls at us, and pulls out his tablet.
"Well, well, that's another one, idiots."
"Hey,
don't call paper an idiot."
"Dougie, it's okay. Mr. Bradline, listen." I point to the staticky speaker in the lift cabin, a zombie auto drive system that's been resurrected too many times. It's wheezing, pleading with us to let it die for good this time. "She's dead. It wasn't our fault."
"You know what I hear, idiots? Opportunity. You've got 3 hours to make up for that loss and hit our numbers, or you're docked for the day. Now get the hell out of here."
Tom Bradline is a dick.